I'd like to ask Susie Frankel now if she would come and open up, begin the process of opening up the discussion about the possibility of writing an Indigenous Creative Commons license in New Zealand.
Thanks. I'd like to begin by thanking the members of the panel who've indulged in some false attribution. I didn't write anything in these licences. I am part of the legal team, but so far I've had a free ride, but I think that this session is the end of my free ride. My research is very much focused on intellectual property law, and there are two nexuses to intellectual property law that are really relevant to the beginning of this discussion, which my research deals with. One is international trade law and intellectual property, and the other is Indigenous people's rights and intellectual property, both internationally and also with a New Zealand focus in relation to Māori. Creative Commons licences, I think, show both an interesting commonality and or commonalities and a number of differences with claims that Indigenous peoples have made in relation to what, for the sake of time, I'll call cultural intellectual property claims, whether they're claims to traditional knowledge, privacy type rights, appropriate uses, and so on. Some of the ethos that we've heard this morning behind Creative Commons has that idea of sharing for the common good. We were discussing in the morning tea break where the term commons comes from, and there may be many with much more sophisticated knowledge of this than me, but of course it is the idea of sharing. In lawyers' terms, it comes from the real property concept. It's that patch of land where you all grow your vegetables together. So in intellectual property terms, it's that patch where you share in order to create and innovate. It has, of course, been mentioned that Creative Commons is a way to use your copyright rights. It is, in fact, copyright friendly. It's just a different method of exploitation. And so whilst I start with those two points, I think that those two points might underlie some of the commonalities of Indigenous people's claims, but also the differences. I have done a lot of work, and I won't really be talking about that in detail today, in relation to the claim that is at the Waitangi Tribunal. I have a role as intellectual property advisor to the tribunal, so I'm very familiar with a lot of the work around traditional knowledge and Indigenous people's rights claims within New Zealand. And much of the evidence, the public evidence that was given in that claim, indicated the desire to share knowledge for the common good. And that is an immediate point that leaps out from Creative Commons. But one of the clear differences that arises out of Indigenous people's claims is that sharing isn't always a good idea. It depends on what you do with that sharing. So Creative Commons license indicate to us some of these, we return to the commonalities again, that the licensing is about, yes, do share, but only on these conditions. And this does raise the question whether Creative Commons licensing shows something that may be of use in relation to the use and further use of works that raise issues of traditional knowledge protection, cultural intellectual property protection. On the other hand, the fact that Creative Commons, at least at this stage, is distinctly linked to copyright may itself be perceived as a barrier. Copyright, of course, does not fit many of the claims relating to traditional knowledge, cultural intellectual property rights, because of its parameters, because of issues of requiring originality, because of duration issues, and Creative Commons, I don't think in any way attempts to solve that issue. It is about copyright law, but it does show that the exploitation of copyright in a different way means that some of those issues can be explored creatively in a way that can help understand and further develop the issues we have of the tension between Indigenous intellectual property rights and copyright law. Now, when we talk about Creative Commons being premised on copyright, the existence of the copyright, and very briefly mentioned, of course, the idea of putting your works in the public domain. Now, of course, the phrase the public domain is an extremely useful one. I think it's a bit like the commons, it's a bit like the vegetable patch. It's become a term that means both a lot and a little within intellectual property law. So you put something in the public domain because it's out there. But there's two types of public domains. There's the one that's protected, such as the Creative Commons licensing, and there's the one that is the free-for-all, the one where it's in the public domain, anyone can use it to then create their new intellectual property work. And it is the concept of the free-for-all that is particularly difficult issue in relation to the protection of Indigenous intellectual property, because it is the perception, often wrong, that these cultures' culture is in the public domain. What I see is a very interesting issue that I hope you'll be interested in discussing in that particular workshop is what Creative Commons can teach about this. I think that what it shows is that it is possible to have something in the public domain, but to have it controlled, to have it appropriately used. There will always be incidences where things are, that license is violated, difficulties, litigation, but it occurs with or without Creative Commons licenses. The beauty of the Creative Commons license, and there are lots of steps in between this, but just briefly to outline, is that whilst I wouldn't purport to say this is the solution for Māori in New Zealand, I can see that if what you want to do is yes, and many of you may be familiar with this example, so I'll explain the point through example. Yes, Lego company, please do use Māori words for your game, but would you please use the correct ones and not the insulting ones? Then you can see how the concept of Creative Commons licensing is a similar concept to that. The very difficult starting point, and the one that is not yet resolved, is of course, is there any proprietary right in those names in the first place? And I know that many of you in government deal with these issues in your particular departments in difficult ways all the time. Government is both responsible for some very good works that we saw this morning and possibly also for ducking for cover, because this is an incredibly difficult issue, both nationally and internationally. But my purpose is really here, at least in this initial discussion, to point out some of the commonalities of theme, because what is being sought in the Indigenous people's right cultural property debate is an appropriate use of work, attribution, non-commercial use, permission for commercial use where appropriate. And I pick on those terms because we've heard them from each of the speakers this morning. So it is my great hope in this area that there is a commonality of interest. It doesn't mean to suggest that all Mataronga Māori, all issues of cultural intellectual property ought to be Creative Commons licensed. That's not what I'm suggesting. But there's a certain commonality there that I use to bring the issue of, as New Zealand looks at Creative Commons licensing, as New Zealand progresses in its discussion of the protection of Mataronga Māori, the protection of Māori intellectual property, then how Creative Commons license can contribute to that debate, I think will be very important. I'll stop there. Take any questions at this stage. Thanks.
I'm a linguist, and I'm particularly interested to hear you talking about the use of words out in the context of copyright. And linking that up to the question of wikis and who's the author, I wonder if it might be useful, and could you comment on the feasibility of developing different types of attribution, which include an acknowledgement that there is no owner and there should be no owner of this type of property, because I would hate to see a situation where anybody or any group claimed ownership of a language because then we would have to pay royalties every time we wanted to use work, or, you know, it would just, it could potentially interfere with the natural development processes that languages go through.
Well, I guess you've sort of asked a question which is the heart of the Y262 claim, or actually it's the heart of part four of the Y262 claim, and that doesn't mean to suggest that it's any further down. I would suggest to you, however, that at least in that context, ownership of a language is both an over and understatement of what is claimed. But if I can come at it from another angle, because I don't really want to talk at a claim that is technically, although the tribunal is not a judicial body, sub judice, right? Okay. The interesting thing about intellectual property law, and people here may have comments, is that intellectual property law, one of its permanent tensions is the proprietorship of language. Okay? So copyright usually distinguishes itself by saying you can say it this way if you like, you just can't say it the same way as me, but you can say the same thing. Trademark law, there are many scholars writing about how trademark law has attempted to proprietary interests in language. You can't use this word. Is it generic or does it actually belong to someone? My view in the context which I'm talking here is that the protection of an Indigenous interest in it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to pay royalties for the use of the word. Let me give you an example, and I'll use the Lego example, although I don't purport to be representing the claimants in relation to that. One of the Lego examples, which is also in Moana Maniapoto's documentary, who played at the MED function last night, is the use of whenua. Now, I don't even speak Te Reo, so if anyone wants to correct my pronunciation, please go ahead. But is that appropriate use on a bionicle toy? Now, the claim there isn't that you have to pay royalties for the use of that, it's to respect the culture and use it. And I don't think that the recognition of that necessarily locks up language. In fact, one of the potential uses of using language but being sure that it's used in the way you want is what Creative Commons aims at. Now, your question has two limbs, right? One is, what about the things that aren't in copyright anymore? And I think it's very difficult to contemplate that within the Creative Commons framework, because it is about things that are in copyright. For the Indigenous knowledge that is used in copyright works, one of the relevant issues is Creative Commons the right thing? Is should it be licensed in that way? Should it be free for other people to use without consulting the original owners? So it may very well be that for some works, copyright works that involve Indigenous knowledge, Creative Commons is not the way to go because it doesn't give the control. But it may be for others that it does give the appropriate level of control. It's a very complicated issue. But I would like to steer you clear of the path by saying protecting the use of a language means you own it and have to pay royalties. Because if that were completely true, all intellectual property law should go out the window. And I believe that whether you phrase it like that or not, most people believe that it can have a good cause if it's used correctly.
The royalties was a bit flippant, but I deny that anyone owns a language. Anyone owns a language. Language is not like that. And I'm concerned about the move to make everything copyrightable so that everybody has to declare what they own and in what way they own everything, which I think undermines the basis of the commons, which is that no one owned it and it was free to all.
Well, I think that, as I said, that's definitely a view of the commons, right? It is free to all, but the view of the commons, which Anne outlined for us initially this morning, was that you can put something out there and still retain your copyright interest. And this is a new way of doing it. That's what happens with copyright all the time. It's out there, it's available for use, but only in limited circumstances. I mean, I guess what I'm cautioning away from is the idea that any Indigenous people's rights claims is necessarily a claim to own language. I think that in this context, it's just a little bit more multi-layered, more of an onion than that, yeah. But I welcome your presence in my workshop later. Any other questions at this stage? Yeah, sure. We'll move on.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Susie.